what's beneath the surface of true crime. Uncover brings you there with premium investigations that demand justice. Each season delves into a distinct case, from the inner workings of a cult to the disturbing legacy of residential schools. Promising new content year-round, Uncover will take you on a journey through explosive revelations with hosts dedicated to revealing the truth. Uncover, the best in true crime. Find it on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Jamie Poisson.
It's hard, I think, for anybody to imagine a family dynamic that is so Game of Thrones without dragons.
I don't watch Game of Thrones, but there's definitely dragons. And that's, again, the third party, which is the British press.
That's Prince Harry, speaking with host Anderson Cooper on 60 Minutes last Sunday. He's talking about the outsized role the tabloids play in the inner workings of the British royal family. Harry's lifelong discomfort and even downright hatred of the press has been a major theme during the splashy publicity tour for his new memoir. It's called Spare, a reference to Harry's birth spot in the order of succession to the throne. And it's made a lot of headlines with allegations about how those closest to the crown use Fleet Street for their own ends. Today, I want to try to understand this delicate and deeply entwined relationship between the monarchy and the media, and why it may be more important now for the royal family than ever before. To help us with that, I'm joined by Katie Nicholl. She's a longtime Royals watcher, currently Vanity Fair's Royals correspondent, and author of 5 books on the Royals, including the latest, The New Royals. Hey, Katie, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Jamie. It's a pleasure to join you.
So we just heard Prince Harry call the British press dragons during his book tour, and we'll get to that in a second. But overall, what do you think of the royal family's relationship with the media, given that you've spent so much time covering them?
Well, I mean, rather than what he could have said, which is that it's a sort of a relationship where one needs the other, a sort of symbiotic relationship, I think for the most part that works well. I mean, look, no one's going to pretend that the royal family love the media, the tabloids. Of course they don't. But they've learned to tolerate the tabloids. They've learned to work alongside the British media. And I think they are astute enough to recognise that without the British media and the publicity that it gives to them, they would be in a very different situation. I think there is still a role the print plays in royals and in the publicity of the royals, their work, and what they do.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a bit more about what Harry says happens in that relationship. And then I guess, how do you see it? How do you think it works?
Well, Harry clearly feels that it's a very unhealthy relationship. He feels that there's a lot of leaking, briefings, and particularly negative briefings and the planting of stories about certain members of the royal family, often to improve the image of other royal family members. And he's been quite explicit in explaining this. But I think he's stopped short of actually giving any concrete evidence. He does give one example in his book about Camilla and how she used a spin doctor at the time to boost her own image at the expense of Harry.
You wrote that she started a campaign in the British press to pave the way for a marriage. And you wrote, "I even wanted Camilla to be happy. Maybe she'd be less dangerous if she was happy." Mm-hmm. How was she dangerous?
Because of the need for her to rehabilitate her image.
That made her dangerous?
That made her dangerous because of the connections that she was forging within the British press. And there was open willingness on both sides to trade of information. And with a family built on hierarchy, and with her on the way to being Queen Consort, there was going to be people or bodies left in the street because of that.
He talks about his own drugs expose in the News of the World newspaper and how that came out, but how other stories were often buried, or that story might have been elevated in the media. Because actually it took the spotlight off other members of the royal family, perhaps such as Camilla, because Camilla does seem to be a recurrent theme in this narrative, and put the spotlight on him. What he fails to recognise in all of this, and I think the sense that I get across most of the interviews that he's done and in the book as well, is he doesn't seem to have any culpability, doesn't he? He doesn't seem to say at any point, you know, the press, they got me, and actually they had every right to get to me because I was doing illegal stuff, I was behaving badly, I was completely out of control, and, you know, I was naive to think that as the spare, as the third in line to the throne, I was going to get away with it. He doesn't say that at all. In fact, he delights at lying to his communications officer or his father's communications officer at the time by saying then that he wasn't doing the drugs. And of course, the tabloid editors and the royal journalists at the time knew full well that he was doing drugs, that he was underage drinking.
Since Prince Harry has been at Eton, his father has tried to ensure he can have as normal a life as possible. But this latest story about Prince Harry is the third time the 14-year-old has made headlines in the Mirror since he started at Eton.
Not every story was false, but there was a lot of typical exaggeration and rehashing. He's bouncing between the walls, he's taking drugs, he's drinking, he's out late, he's nightclubbing, he's got a girlfriend here, he's got a girlfriend there. What's going on?
And so, you know, we are absolutely only hearing it through his side of the story. But I think his view is understandable because of what happened to his mother, because of how he sees things just clearly in black and white. The press are the villain, they are the enemy, the dragon, however you want to portray them. They, you know, they're the evil persona in this narrative, and he is the victim, and he very much sees it as that.
Yeah.
And I think most people can probably understand. I mean, he paints some quite graphic images in the autobiography of being chased by the paparazzi.
You know, there's a difference between having to accept, okay, we have this position in this family, and therefore there's going to be a level of interest, and being swarmed by paparazzi and chasing you in cars through red lights, and then chasing you down the road on foot, which is what happened probably about 30 or 40 times when I was younger.
Having them hounding him in the street, and he talked mm-hmm. about Tweedledum and Tweedledummer. It doesn't actually name them, but they're two pals. He sort of turned up on one occasion behind a wall in the middle of the countryside when Harry's at a friend's wedding or some sort of social event. And he sort of thinks he's outside, he's having a private conversation with friends, and he hears a click from the bushes. And he can't understand how these people are there, but he knows it's one of those packs. And so he is absolutely haunted by them. He's absolutely paranoid about them. And I think most people can understand his hatred of them, given what happens to his mother.
Yeah.
When I started my public life 12 years ago, I understood the media might be interested in what I did. I realised then their attention would inevitably focus on both our private and public lives. But I was not aware of how overwhelming that attention would become, nor the extent to which it would affect both my public duties and my personal life in a manner that's been hard to bear.
However, there is an important distinction to make in all of this, and I don't think he lays this out. At the time, there was an agreement between the British media and the palace after the death of Diana that the British press would not use unauthorised pictures. This was to protect William and Harry as they grew up. And for the most part, they were left alone. You didn't see intrusive paparazzi images in the British press of the princes as they grew up. I think there's an important distinction to be made between the paparazzi and the British media as well. And he doesn't really explain that. So I think it's quite difficult for anyone that's perhaps not familiar with the idea of the British royal rota system as well
yeah.
to understand. So
I mean, but he does take aim at the royal rota system, right?
Like, he does.
Explain to me, just as somebody who doesn't live in the UK, yeah, how does it work?
Well, essentially, it is a pool of reporters from the key national newspapers in Britain who each have royal correspondents. And it is a pool of reporters that are invited by the palace to go to official engagements on official royal tours and cover those events. One journalist will go and do one event, another journalist will go and do another. There's a rota photographers as well, and that information is pooled. It is shared within that group of accredited official royal media and shared amongst them. So it's the official pack of royal reporters. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And like how do they get stories? Like how does it work? And then who are these reporters? Are they the tabloids? Like what does it look like here?
The Royal Rota is made up of print media. That's both the tabloids, so the Sun, the Mirror, and the Daily Mail, and the broadsheets, the Telegraph, the Times, etc. And it also comprises the broadcast media, so Sky, BBC, ITV, etc., etc. And in each of those media outlets has a specialist correspondent, a royal correspondent. And they are accredited by the palace. They are accredited at official engagements and overseas tours. They cover that beat, the royal genre, for their newspaper. And the royals, in turn, have to play ball with them. So, you know, you're not always going, well, more often than not, you don't get a sit-down interview. You don't really get any access. I mean, it sounds like you're on some sort of inside circuit, but you're not. You're there and you're often behind a rope or, you know, standing in a line on a red carpet or outside the engagement, recording that moment. So the idea that Harry paints this picture that the Royal Rota is fed, mm-hmm. drip-fed stories from the palace is simply not the case. Yes, we get official op notes. We're told in advance before the public know where they're going on tour, if they're going abroad, what engagements they'll be doing that week. We're given embargoed information so that we know what's happening, so that we can plan our diaries and so that we can attend those engagements and be there ahead of the royals. But this idea that royal correspondents are telephoned by palace press officers and given stories, it's just not the case. I mean, if only the job was that easy.
And that sort of press pack of royal correspondents is essentially just an extended PR arm of the royal family. So it's been an agreement that's been there for over 30 years. And if you're part of the Royal Rota, you have priority over the story over everybody else.
And it's certainly not the case in my experience that negative stories were planted or leaked.
Yeah, and I just want to be clear here. You're part of this Rota. Is that what you're saying? You're part of this Rota?
I was a part of that Rota when I worked for the Mail on Sunday. And I am I'm now, because I work for Vanity Fair, I'm sort of part of what we call the International Royal Rota. So we do get access to events, but I'm not part of the British media Rota anymore.
Maybe I haven't been
for some time.
Yeah, if I could just push back on this idea for a second. I'm so fascinated just because of your personal experience. Like, you know, you get access to the royals, the media gets access to the royals because they're in this Rota. So does that not kind of bolster Harry's claims that it's like a PR wing for the royal family because the media wants access, right? And so it sort of keeps the system going where everybody is happy, right?
No, I don't think so. I mean, how else would you get your work relayed? How else would you let the world know what you're doing if you didn't have a rota of correspondents following you? I mean, think about the White House correspondents and how they follow the president and report on the president. I mean, it's very similar. It's a similar construct. Is it a PR wing? It's a communications office. It's a royal communications office. And the job of those royal communications officers is to communicate with the media, to let the media know what the principles of the royal family are doing, and to give information and access where appropriate. So I think that is a different role to PRing the royal family, because it's not like they are there to only PR them and put them out in a good light. I mean, yes, I suppose their job is to protect their image. It's to promote them on a public stage. But essentially, it's to put out information and it's to accommodate this sort of official organization of royal correspondents so that they can write about the goings on and the day-to-day activities of the members of the royal family.
You mentioned earlier that like the Rota isn't drip-fed stories from the royal family. But I guess the question I have is, like, Do they leak on each other like Harry alleges? Like, I'm just thinking of a few headlines that I've seen lately, right? Since his book came out. Here's one in the Daily Mail. Prince Harry has been written out of the script for the coronation, and they cite royal sources. Here's another one from The Independent. Royals despair as Prince Harry kidnapped by cult of psychotherapy. Like, they also cite a royal source. Like, where is that coming from? Is that not the royal family just leaking on other members of the royal family?
No, and I think that's really important that people understand. If you see a royal source, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's coming out of the palace. It certainly doesn't indicate that it's coming from a member of the royal family. I mean, the very idea that a member of the royal family would speak directly to a journalist to brief, it just doesn't happen. I mean, that's the sort of thing that happened.
Does it not happen?
Like, in Diana's days, I mean, the idea that the king picks up the phone and has a conversation with a journalist. I mean,
or that like the king's press secretary picks up the phone and has a conversation with the journalist off the record. Does that really not happen? I just always assume that that's what was happening.
Well, I mean, have I had conversations with the king's communications officer? Yes, of course I have. And then it's his job to communicate with me as an accredited journalist, and I may be seeking information about an engagement or about a future engagement or about a tour. I mean, of course, there is a discourse between a communications officer and a journalist, and you are a journalist yourself. So I'm struggling to see why you find that such a difficult concept to understand.
But I guess my question is, like, this idea that the royal family doesn't leak, like, how do we... It kind of makes sense to me that they would leak. Like, this allegation that he's making... that there's all this leaking going on and it's coming from members of the royal family. Like, why is that so not true, I guess, is what I'm just trying to figure out.
Well, where's the evidence, Jamie? Where are you seeing in all the pages? I'm assuming you've read the entire book, yeah? Have you read the whole book?
I haven't read the book. I'm just wondering because you see all these royal sources.
So maybe, for me
as a journalist, I would probably want to choose a source. Like, I would only print something that was very, very close or the original source, right? So, like, this headline that Camilla is like blindsided, right, by Harry's allegations in the book. Like, how close is that to Camilla? Is that not like Camilla or her office? I guess.
Well,
that's my question.
Harry's said in the book that the Camilla leaked, and we've discussed the incident that he was referring to, which was the first meeting. And he said, well, how could anyone else have found out about our first meeting? Well, in fact, it was one of the private secretaries who had a conversation with someone else, and it had gotten back to a journalist accidentally. I mean, I'm paraphrasing because this wasn't my story, and it was well before I was reporting, but it wasn't the case that Camilla herself had been leaking. I mean, this whole concept of briefings, of course, briefings happen. Absolutely. It's the job of a communications officer to brief. But this idea that the palace is leaking negative stories about Harry and Meghan, I mean, all I can tell you from my experience of reporting is that I've never had a press officer at the palace leak a negative story about Harry and Meghan. That was not what happened. It certainly wasn't what happened with me.
I'm Samantha Cole, host of the new season of Understood, the Pornhub Empire. Over the course of 4 episodes, I'll tell you how a horny YouTube knockoff in Canada came to dominate the porn world, only to shatter their cheeky reputation in a massive scandal. The Pornhub Empire is a new season of Understood from the CBC. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Is this all, you know, that you hear about this never complain, never explain motto? Is this all part of that?
I think
they don't necessarily, if they're not responding to the book or...
Yeah, I mean, I think in this episode, and I think this is probably quite reflective of other occasions when the royal family has sort of come under fire, they've come in for criticism, the never complain, never explain is a tried and tested method, and it has... You know, it has worked.
Be so public. Why reveal conversations you've had with your father or with your brother? You say you tried to do this privately.
And every single time I've tried to do it privately, there have been briefings and leakings and planting of stories against me and my wife. You know, the family motto is never complain, never explain, but it's just a motto. And it doesn't really hold.
There's a lot of complaining and a lot of explaining.
Endless.
Private being done in through leaks.
Through leaks.
I think the palace's viewers, had they responded to the book, I mean, where would they even start? There are so many allegations, there are so many claims, and that actually, by not saying anything, they have deemed for right or wrong, that is the best way to deal with it in order to not allow the narrative to continue. In a few days' time, you're going to see the king going on engagement. So just to go back to original point, you know, does the communications officers, they speak to journalists? Yes, of course. The king will be on an engagement later on this week. We've been told about it. We know what's going on. And some of the accredited media will be on that engagement to cover it. They will write about it. They will report on it. And it'll be in the newspapers the next day. That's the relationship between the press and the communications officers at the Royal Palace. What isn't happening is them calling up and saying, right, well, the king's doing this, and actually this is a great opportunity for you to put the, you know, the boot into Harry and Meghan over in California, because they're not doing that. It just doesn't happen. And just to go back to the other point that you were making about royal sources, I think people should be very careful when they read quotes from royal sources, because that's not necessarily it's not necessarily a royal communications officer or press officer, is not necessarily coming out from the palace. It might be someone close to the royals or who knows the royals.
Yeah. And would those people have permission from the royals?
There is a distinction there.
Yeah. I guess I think the ultimate question I'm asking you, as somebody who has been part of this and reporting on this for so long, is like, how good are the quality of these sources, right? Like, I'm a journalist. Like, if I use a source, I need probably multiple sources on the same subject. And I go through like quite a rigorous process with my editors to ensure that this is like a very high quality source. So like, how good are these? Are these decent quality sources? Like, how would you kind of
who are you talking about? What publications are you talking about?
Publications? Because, you know, Harry says the majority of these publications in the Road are tabloids, right? Like, I think he's talking about the Daily Mail or the Mail on Sunday. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't work in that. Yeah.
Well, I know. Well, I mean, you know, I write for Vanity Fair. So for every sort of story that I write, I always have two sources on my story. And I will always go to the palace and run the story past them. I mean, that is what I do. I mean, you know, any good journalist will tell you that accuracy is everything. And so if I go to the palace, I'm often seeking some guidance. I'm often seeking some background on something. And you know, where possible, and if you have a good relationship, you hope that you get a steer on that story, so that if you're wildly inaccurate, they'll tell you, and you may decide to kill that story. They may decide not to comment you, and you may feel that with two really strong sources who have been consistently right in the past, mm-hmm. you're going to take the word of your source. You've had a no comment. So I think a lot of it is judgment and balance. You know, at the end of the day, you want to be as accurate as possible. I suppose why law journalism is so different to other types of journalism is you are largely dependent on unnamed sources. And that's why I think you see royal sources quoted. I mean, I've written five books on the royal family now. And, you know, the most recent one is The New Royals. And you'll see in that book, I do speak to, I've spoken to former royal aides and former royal courtiers. And so in that case, you may see those people attributed as royal sources because they won't go on the record. There are some former communications officers who no longer work at the palace who did agree to go on the record and they are named. But I suppose, an unusual genre in that respect, in that, yes, you will see unnamed sources of royal stories more than others. But that is because there is, I suppose, a sort of an expectation that if you're working for the royal family in any capacity, and I'm not talking about necessarily the communications officer, And, you know, you can't go around speaking on the record about your principles. I mean, you'd be dismissed immediately. Yeah.
And is it your experience that the other papers, some of the papers that, I don't know, Harry says are tabloids? He's not talking about Vanity Fair. He doesn't seem to be talking about like the Telegram or the Guardian. But like, are they keeping those same standards?
Well, I'm not a spokesperson for the tabloid press. All I would say is that if you look at the stories that the tabloid press have broken, I'm thinking about The Sun, who seemed to have a string of, you know, at the time of Brexit. I mean, it was The Sun, I think, who broke the story that they were going to be leaving Britain for Canada. They seem to have been pretty on the money. I'm not saying that every detail has always been correct, but the details of the rift between Meghan and Kate, that they didn't get along. There have been so many stories that have been spot on, that I would say even if the information has largely been dependent on unnamed sources, those unnamed sources, royal sources, however you want to list them, have been pretty accurate, have they not?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess Harry would, and Meghan would,
I mean,
argue
do you
that
not,
they were
do you
not accurate
think?
At all. I feel like that's their whole thing. But this symbiotic.
Well, hang on a second. Let's just discuss.
Well, like, for
this
example,
journalist.
I guess we're talking about a bridesmaid's dress here. But like, I think their argument would be like the papers got that completely wrong, that it was Kate that made her cry, right? Like, I think that's their whole.
But actually, what my report in Vanity Fair was, I was told that it was both women who were left in tears, and my reading of Spare is that exactly was mm-hmm. what happened. Now, regardless of who made who cry or anything else, there was an upset over the bridesmaids' dresses. I mean, I think there was a report that it was tights. Okay, someone got a small detail wrong and that sort of thing. Not every detail is always right. But actually, the stories of fallouts, of arguments behind the scenes, of this court really absolutely at war with each other, these brothers at war, these sister-in-laws. I mean, you know, the tabloids were right. And I have to say, my experience of being a journalist writing at that time and running some of those stories, the palace were not confirming any of that. I mean, even then, they were doing their best to sort of protect the image of the monarchy, to protect Harry and Meghan. And to, I got no comment. No one would stand that story up. And I actually went to the palace over the story about Kate taking flowers to Meghan after an episode to apologise. I got no comment out the palace. No one was saying anything about it. Now, if there was any opportunity to break or to spin or to plant against Meghan, because that's what Harry feels was happening, that would have surely been a really good opportunity to do it. It didn't happen.
We've been talking about, and just a final question, you mentioned that the royal family clearly, like, knows that they need the press as well. Like, of course, I think you could argue, like, their existence sort of depends on public opinion. And so, like, they need this relationship. And you know, given that more and more people are questioning the relevance of the monarchy, that Commonwealth countries are basically thinking about or kind of dropping out of the Commonwealth, do you think this relationship with the press is more important now than ever? Like, how do you look at it going forward?
I think that idea of print, newspapers particularly, being the sort of go-to medium of royal news is changing. And I think that's come as a massive relief to the royal family. I mean, this idea that they're in bed with the tabloid media, I just don't think that really is the case. I mean, I think William hates the British media and the media full stop as much as his brother, actually. He's just learned to live with them. He's learned to tolerate them. You know, Charles, you know, doesn't want to read the papers, deplores the media. He doesn't like it. But he knows that he's had to live with them, alongside them. And, you know, he was the one who said to Harry,
my dad said to me, darling boy, you can't take on the media. The media will always be the media. And I said, I fundamentally disagree.
But I think what the royal family have seen in the age of Twitter and social media is that they can have a different platform. And I think if you look particularly to to the king and the queen consort and their Instagram handle, William and Kate and their new YouTube channel as well as Instagram. This was something they really cultivated and really invested in over the pandemic when, of course, they couldn't do the traditional work of engagements and meeting people, et cetera, et cetera. And in doing that, they were able to go directly to their people, to their subjects. And I think that has been incredibly empowering. So, you know, you wonder whether the sort of traditional print media, whether the days really are numbered and are limited. And I suspect if that is the case, well, obviously Prince Harry will be absolutely elated because they are the bane of his life. But you wonder if there might be quite a bit of relief amongst the rest of the royal family as well. You know, this idea that they're in bed with each other and the very best of friends, honestly, couldn't be further from the truth. It's more a relationship where the royal family tolerates the British media and the Royal Rota and just gets along with it. Harry's made that decision not to.
And I guess the last thing I might ask you is what about the other side of that argument, that this like constant cycle of tabloid and coverage, that it is working in that it keeps them in the zeitgeist, right? Like it keeps them more relevant than they might be if, I don't know, they all just stop covering them tomorrow and you just check their YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
I mean, yeah, because I think they have to have that oxygen of publicity in order to survive, in order to continue. I mean, it's a symbiotic relationship. One needs the other, whether that's media is print and newspapers or whether that media is Instagram and their YouTube channels. If people aren't aware of what they're doing, then the monarchy isn't able to survive. You have to have the support of the people.
Okay. Katie, thank you so much for this conversation. It was interesting. I learned a lot and it was nice and lively. Thank you.
No, absolutely fine. I mean, I'm not here as a spokesperson for the British tabloids. So it's, you know, I think you probably ought to speak to someone from the Sun or someone from the Mail. But, you know, obviously I have had some experience of that world and I can only give you my story. I can only give you my experience. And, you know, everything I said to you is really the case. And, you know, these negative plantings, negative briefings, it just wasn't my experience.
Okay. Well, it was really interesting to hear your experience. So thank you so much. All right. That is all for today. I'm Jamie Poisson. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.